Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Morning Yankee Show. It is Tuesday, April 27th, 2026, and I'm already lying to you, chat. It's April 28th, 2026. Hope everybody is doing well, as, yeah, we're here with another episode of the Morning Yankee Show, coming to you live the morning of Game 2 versus the Texas Rangers. Of course, we'll be live for the watch party later tonight, right around 8 o'clock for that. First pitch is at 8:05. But yeah, good morning, everybody. Hope you're all doing great on this lovely Tuesday morning. It is a lovely Tuesday morning. Two really nice days in a row after a weekend of showers, chat. And I really do think with this new news format, the layout that we got going on here, I'm going to have a traffic report and like a live weather check-in. Because it borderline already kind of looks like the Weather Channel on here. But I like it. I like it. And you guys were kind of gassing up yesterday. Not going to lie, that made me feel really good. I do like when you guys are happy. And we should all be happy right now because the Yankees are playing good ball. They won game one against the Rangers last night, 4-2. The bullpen, which does remain the team's biggest weakness, although that will be shored up down the road, at least you figure. I'm banking on the trade deadline. I'm banking on come October, you'll need a four-man staff. So that guarantees, regardless of what the in-season conversation is with Will Warren and Ryan Weathers, I don't get too caught up in that because I know come October, we'll have a four-man staff of, depending on the order, but Cole, Fried, Rodon, Cam, you only need four starters in the postseason. So no matter what, barring injuries, I know it's a ways away, Weathers and Warren will be in the bullpen come October. There's a trade deadline coming up. We could call up Carlos Lagrange. And to be honest, I know this is crazy to say right now, but I actually am feeling optimistic about Camilo Duvall because he really has improved the command. But we'll get into all this with game one. Of course, the Judge-Rice duo continued its dominance. Jazz went deep. Max Fried continues to be terrific. We'll touch more on the game, but the specifics and storylines come out of that game, and then we'll preview later tonight, which would be an awesome pitching matchup. Tonight we got, as you see in the bottom ticker there, it just went by, Cam Schiller versus Jacob deGrom tonight, which it's a prime game, by the way. So keep that in mind. Tonight is a prime game. It's an Amazon Prime. But we got to get through the first thing off the top here, which of course is the news that Giancarlo Stanton has officially been placed on the 10-day injured list. Now, of course, Friday, he left the Houston game with what we knew was a lower body issue. We now know it's a low-grade right calf strain. He had not played since leaving the game on Friday. Yankees were trying to give him a few extra days. You know, we anticipated yesterday when we were on here, and, you know, we kind of all assumed Stanton would be placed on the injury list prior to yesterday's game. That wasn't the case. They called up Jason. We're technically playing with a five-man bench, one pitcher short. Well, we don't have the corresponding move just yet, but you got to assume it will be a pitcher coming up today. So Stanton to the injured list. Let's hear really quick from Boone and I'll give my thoughts on it. This is just a quick little soundbite from Boone in regards to like a timetable, which, spoiler alert, he's really not putting a timetable on it.
You optimistic that this could be only 10 days or you're not sure yet?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, but I don't want to put a timetable on it. Hopefully not too long, but we'll see.
Alrighty. So yeah, hopefully not too long, but we'll see. You would figure with it being a low-grade calf strain. Granted, it is Giancarlo Stanton. It shouldn't keep him out too long. And I know the initial thought pushback would be, well, it's Giancarlo Stanton. We probably won't see him till July. Fair. To be honest, I actually don't think this is that big a deal. We'll get to that in just a second. But there has been instances where Stanton has had a quick little IL stint. Now, 2024, sorry, I should have these off the top, or I should have these written down. 2024, I think he landed on the IL briefly, but he still ended up playing around 130 games. But I remember back in 2021, which was one of my favorite Giancarlo Stanton seasons, probably, at least regular season-wise, my favorite year he ever had, the 2021 season. That was the year he hit the Grand Slam against Boston. He was remarkably clutch. He was healthy, and it was a very full and put-together year. Anyways, if you'll remember, he ended up missing a few weeks in May that year, and it wasn't even that long, actually. It was more just like a quick 10-day IL stint. The reason I bring that up is that might be what this is. Who knows? It could be a situation where, all right, it's April 28th right now. Maybe we see Giancarlo Stanton May 10th, or possibly even sooner than that. It is, you know, able to be retroactive to Friday. So theoretically, he'll only spend another 7 days in the IL. But listen, we can be realistic here. In all likelihood, we won't be seeing Giancarlo Stanton for at least a little while. And again, I don't really think that's that big a deal. Like, we knew at some point we would probably be here where Stanton would get hurt and we'll have to deal with the situation where we're without him. And that's where we're at right now. But something we've talked about a lot on this show and on the watch parties, I harp on it a lot, is this year is different. and I know I say that every single year, but there's a method to my madness here. It really is more true than ever that we're ready for adversity in many regards more than ever. That applies to Giancarlo Stanton. It's pretty simple. Jason Dominguez is going to DH against righties. And in all likelihood, Paul Goldschmidt will DH mostly against lefties, although I don't want to just assume that. And I really don't want that to be always the case. Like, I want to see Jason get some run at DH against lefties because we know he hit 389 this year in AAA against southpaws in about, I think it was 19 at-bats. Overall, very productive start to the year for him at AAA. And last night went 1-for-4 with a nice little looping line drive single to left field. I would like to see Jason get some run against lefties, but we know also Paul Goldschmidt will get majority of the DH time against southpaws. So probably even same for him. He'll get some starts at DH against righties, as you figure Jason will against lefties. You'll have Judge get a DH day here and there. I mean, the Yankees will make it work. This really is not an issue. I mean, that to be honest, is like the bottom line there. With I'm not stressing about this. In a way, I'm almost excited about it. Like, I get excited with where we're at in this team, where I kind of want our depth to be tested. And also, you know, being healthy forever is almost a bad omen. This is kind of like, hey, we're dealing with a little bit of adversity. Let's see how we handle it. And we should be able to handle it well. And I was listening to Michael Kay's show yesterday, as I do every single day, on ESPN 660. Well, I was listening on the YouTube feed. And I like something Kay was saying, but I actually disagree with him a little bit. I don't disagree, but he was complimenting the Yankees this year on how they seem to have more urgency to them. They're not really caring about people's feelings. And he was referring to Luis Gil and how the Yankees like, all right, you're struggling. We'll just send you down. Well, the difference, though, is now the Yankees can afford to do things like that. Whereas, take it with Stan, take it with Heal last year, Luis Heal was our game two starter against the Blue Jays in the American League Division Series. Last year, we were not in a position to be able to just send Luis Heal down. We were relying on Luis Heal, and that applies to many years in the past, whether it be, I don't know, Luis Severino returning from the IL, and he's our big trade deadline acquisition. We have never really been in a spot where, in the case of Luis Heal, we can just send him down. But now we can. We don't need him. We have depth. In the case of Giancarlo Stanton, you don't want him to get hurt. You don't want Luis Gil to be bad, but if he's bad, we got options. If Stanton gets hurt, we got options. We got multiple options at DH with Jason, with Goldschmidt, with, again, got to mention, Randall Grichuk. It'll show somewhere on the bottom ticker here, but his last seven games, he's hitting .333. Again, you'll see Judge get some time at DH. This is not the end of the world by any means. And it also applies with, you know, shortstop, like in terms of the depth being tested or just more so having options like we haven't had in the past. We know Volpe is going to be coming back as the starting shortstop. I still think it'll be Friday. It's not confirmed just yet. We should know. It won't be during the Rangers series. Obviously, we have two games left, off day Thursday. Then some point during the homestand, Volpe will be back. Anyways, he'll get the shortstop job back. But if he struggles, more so thinking going into the postseason, we have the option of Jose Caballero. Like, nothing is guaranteed in terms of, if we don't have this guy, we're screwed. Or if this guy's bad, we just got to roll it out. Like, no, we have options. And in the case of DH, Giancarlo Stanton getting hurt is not the end of the world. And you kind of figured we were headed this way. I do, to a degree, wonder. I wasn't as stressed about it as, you know, some people in the JM office were yesterday about it, which I understand. Like, why are the Yankees just choosing to play a man short? They're dumb as hell. Which, fair, I don't mind at all that much because of the fact that it essentially is just, all right, we don't need a fifth starter till May 5th. We just have Luis Gil off the roster. And they wanted to see if Stanton could get through these next few days and possibly avoid the IL. Don't even think that was necessary. Like, my initial title for this stream, if we did not know what the injury deal was going to be with Stanton IL-wise, was going to be, yo, like, just IL him. Because, one, it's really not a big deal. Long-term, it is a big deal where you want him to be healthy. And now we know officially he's going on the IL. And, again, it's really no issue. The Yankees have Jason. I'm excited to see Jason. Again, I actually, like, not that I'm celebrating Giancarlo Stanton getting hurt. I want him to be in there, but more so just from the standpoint of I like to see a full season's worth of numbers. And I think a full season Giancarlo Stanton, although have been struggling a little bit lately with the exception of the Boston series, his numbers had come down to like a OPS in like the low to mid 700s. I still want to see a full body of work. Like, it'd be nice to, you know, 130 plus games from Stanton, which, hey, we could still get. One last thing on the topic of Stanton. So, long-term thought, I mentioned this yesterday on the watch party. I don't think we mentioned it on here, but I'm thinking about the question, and then we'll move on to some other stuff. We got a bunch to talk about today, including the title of this video. I'm excited to get to it. Just real quick, long-term the thought, you know, people will wonder, well, what if Jason rakes and then Stanton comes back? What do you do? Well, Stanton will get playing time, as I'm sure Jason still would if he's playing well, but at least for this year, which is, again, not about feelings, as Case said. It's all about the best team possible. Side note on that, the Yankees were raving about it yesterday. Many Yankees were. Boone were. Jason has handled himself so well since, whether it be losing playing time last year, throughout this entire year. It's really made my, like, I was never in a bad spot with Jason. Like, I love Jason. I think he's freaking awesome. It's my favorability towards him has increased even more so with the way he's handled this whole situation. Anyways, come October, this is what I envision the role to be. You're definitely going to want Jason on the postseason roster because of his speed. But you know how over the last couple weeks, we've seen it where late in the game, Giancarlo Stanton will get on. Even when the Yankees have a lead, and it's worked out that they've done this, where they keep him in the game, they don't pinch run for him because they may need his bat later on, which has paid off very well. And by the way, I know Boone, like, I don't know, shill, whatever it may be. Like, I just don't call for his job nonstop. But he's had a really good year at manager. Anyways, my thought is with Jason, you could look at it where not a platoon of the DH, but more so if you need a pinch run for Stanton late in a game, you don't have to stress about that. You don't even got to think twice because you can pinch run Jason, get his speed on the base paths, and then if you need that at bat later on, well, Jason would just be in the DH slot anyways. So I look at it like in the postseason, Stanton's your DH. He's going to get at least the first three at-bats. But if he gets on come that fourth at-bat in a close game or just looking to get some insurance, you pinch run Jason, and then you're not stressing about him, that slot in the lineup coming up later in the game if you need it because it's freaking Jason Dominguez. When I say it's freaking Jason Dominguez, dude had a 118 WRC plus against right-handed pitching last year. All this dude, for the most part, really has done when healthy is hit. I anticipate he's going to hit in this, however long this little run for him is while Stanton's out. So, again, I don't think this is all that big a deal. I'm not stressed about it. I don't think it's, like, the end of the world. And if anything, I'm actually pretty excited about it. So, with all due respect, I'm not trying to be a punk. Like, Stanton, get healthy. That's really what the whole thought process comes from is Stanton, take your time, get healthy, we'll be good. We do need you, but in the meantime, we should be all right. We should be all right. So with that said, let's move on to the game from yesterday. We got to talk a few things regarding specifics, and we're going to have to start out with what is now quite clearly MLB's most lethal duo in Aaron Judge and Ben Rice, or let's say Ben Rice and Aaron Judge in that order, because you had Rice hitting second, Judge hitting third yesterday, and let's take a listen to last night, plus the post-game interview, which was freaking fantastic. Take a listen to Judge and Rice kind of just, you know, having a fun little banter back and forth at the end of this soundbite. They were back at it again last night.
Ben Rice driven into left center field. That ball is gone. A two-run home run for Rice the other way. His 10th of the year. Drilled to left field and deep. That ball is gone. See ya. A home run for Judge as the Yankees go back to back and take a 3-0 lead.
When you have a guy hitting in front of you, behind you, that's doing that, is that something that's in play? You guys feed off each other?
Yeah, I couldn't let him catch me in homers. I had to make sure I got one after he did that. So
just trying to keep him honest, keep him motivated. You know, he's getting a little complacent. So
got 16. Could you keep up with him this year?
Yeah, I don't know how long this is going to last, but I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it right now, being this close.
I love everything to do with last night, their continuation of just lethal production, which is going to play a big role into this conversation we're going to have later. This is a fun show. I'm already enjoying this because we've got a lot to talk about. But anyways, yeah, 10th home run for Rice, which at the time tied Judge for the lead in on the team. Currently, actually, shout out Munetaka Murakami, who's now, I believe, leading the American League. He's been going off, and I'm pretty happy for him. Very rarely, or maybe it's because I'm getting older, I don't know, but more so when I was younger, like, I wouldn't find myself happy for opposing players, because it's like, why do I care? I'm pretty happy for Murakami. Like, that was a weird offseason for him. Thought at one point the dude was getting money, big-time money. Owens get a two-year deal from the White Sox. Shout out Murakami. He's leading the American League, at least as of this morning. I don't think anybody else has played, so I think it remains the case. Murakami leads the American League in homers. Anyways, 10th home run for Rice. He tied Judge at the time, but the very next at bat, Judge, of course, goes deep for his own solo shot. Well, not Rice had a two-run shot. Judge was a solo shot. 10th home run for Rice, 11th home run for Judge. They are, per Sarah Langs, the first teammates Yankees-wise, to each have 10-plus homers in the first 29 games of a season since Yogi Berra and Mickey Mantle in 1956. Repeat, Ben Rice, Aaron Judge, first pair of Yankee teammates to each have 10-plus homers in the team's first 29 games since Yogi Berra and Mickey Mantle in 1956. Those are some good names to be in company with, of course. And Yeah, let's pull up this screen right here just to, you know, really put it visually wise into context what they're doing here, because it's awesome. And again, this is going to play a role into the conversation we're having, we're going to have later on to wrap the show up. But both are top four in all of baseball in OPS. Right now, you have Judge third. Actually, Judge and MLB. And AL Judge is third. And all of MLB, Judge is fourth. The 1.010 OPS, 11 homers. Slugging is back over 600. The average, you want to see it get back up there. Spoiler alert, it will. But the OBP is in a really good spot for Judge. He's at a 389 OBP. Again, a 621 slugging, a 1.010 OPS. But Ben Rice, 322 average, a 447 on base, 747 slugging percentage. I mean, what we're seeing right here is not just a hot start, not just a thing where, oh, a guy's playing well and we can be excited about it by default. This is more than that. This is true superstardom. This is true best hitter in baseball, a guy that we can look at as already an obvious success out of the Yankees farm system. Again, for those who don't know, Ben Rice was, he was one of those COVID draft picks where, you know, kind of under the radar, and because of the time that it was, you were very much set up to be like kind of screwed and have your career lost to COVID because there wasn't minor league seasons going on. Obviously, the draft was cut short, so you're even lucky to be drafted at all. And in the case of Ben Rice, he was an unranked prospect. Nobody knew about him until really a couple years ago, and the reason being, he just would not stop hitting in the minor leagues. Ended up hitting like 40-plus bombs in like a full season's worth of minor league games across like double, single, triple A. Dude has nonstop hit. And last year, had a really good season, OPS above 800. By now, it's well-documented the bad luck that he endured, but it was still a really good season. A lot of us by this point, and I'm not saying me, like a couple years ago I was on to Ben Rice, but that's where we all started to kind of catch notice because, again, all he did was hit. The Yankees, though, noticed early on that he hits like the shit out of the ball, hits it very hard. And like, not to be cliche and talking like I'm a WWE like match or nothing, but like with authority, you know what I'm saying? Like the Yankees noticed early that we just have to find a way to get this guy's bat in the lineup. And that's what started the transition to first base. Anyways, because they want to get his bat in the lineup somehow. What we're seeing right here, a 215 WRC plus, 322 average, 10 homers, 23 RBIs. It's not just a successful homegrown product. It's not just a lefty bat to protect Judge. We are looking at one of the best hitters in baseball right now. And again, this will play a role into our conversation come the end of the show. But listen, between the production, and that's the main thing, it's exciting, it's awesome, and the fact that he is homegrown. I mean, I always throw the line out there, like, yo, I get down on the watch first and be like, yo, chat, nothing hits more than a homegrown lefty hitting first baseman wearing high socks. I mean, it is just perfect between obviously the production that we're seeing, also just like the dude that Ben Rice is, which plays a role. Like, I don't think anybody would really disagree with that, but you know, there's times where I myself will talk about and see in my own head, think about, which is true, that all that matters is performance. Ultimately, good players solve everything. And we're seeing that across baseball. More often than not, if a player is good, or rather if a team is good, you're going to be all right. Wins create good vibes. Losses create bad vibes. Ultimately, it does all come down to performance. And that is, first and foremost, not even to say it's an added cherry on top, but especially when it's your team, when it's, yeah, I'm biased. I guess I have a superiority complex. Like, when you're the Yankees, like, there is a certain way I like my players to operate. And I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek, but it's the truth. And Ben Rice fits that bill. I mean, whether it's just him on his own, he went to, I forget, where did he go to? It wasn't Princeton. It was one of those, I'm a college dropout, by the way. I went to community college for a month, so I'm not all that aware on the college scene. But he went to one, was it Dartmouth, maybe? I think it was Dartmouth. One of those, like, what do they call them? Grass League schools? No, I'm just kidding, Ivy League schools. I'm not that dumb. Anyways, dude's really smart, handles himself well, is very well spoken, and pair him with Judge, again, first and foremost, production-wise. But that little interview snippet, just seeing them kind of really as a duo, as like a unit, come into like, not come into their own, but like just together, the way they're, it's kind of unfolding where we're seeing, it's Judge and Rice. When we play a game on Saturday Night Baseball for Fox, which that's unfortunate when we do, but we know it's going to come, or come the postseason, the advertising, the billing, the promos for games, it'll be Judge and then it'll be Rice. And it's not a thing where, hey, we have one good player, go with just the next best. No, this is, I mean, again, like, the stats that Rice is putting up, this is not even, like, that small of a sample size, yo. And I guess it is. I mean, it's only 29 games, I understand. But when we're coming off everything we know about Rice entering this year, whether it's the minor league track record, but more so the season he had last year, which if he just put up an 833 OPS again like he did last year, that would be a W. I'd take that. But we know he got very unlucky. He hit the ball to a level where his results suggested he should be elite. Last year, he was just, results-wise, pretty damn good. Well, this year, the metrics are backing up the actual production. Or the production, I should say, is backing up the metrics. He's elite. Again, 322, 447, 744 is the slash line. 10 homers, a 1.11, a 1.191 OPS for Ben Rice. It's thrilling. It really, really is. And again, everything to do with who he is as a dude and just the way this whole team is kind of coming together. Listen, I don't shy away from the idea of, like, being a shill. And I know I definitely, to a degree, am that a little bit. Like, I am glass half full with everything, but especially the Yankees. I recognize that. But I don't really lean away from that these days. Like, if you're looking for, well, I'm not a pessimist, bro. I'm just a realist. I can say that same line about being an optimist, by the way, and technically be just as effective. But no, like, if you're looking for pessimism, but I don't think really anybody is right now. And it's all good. Everybody can have their own thoughts. Like, there's many avenues out there in the Yankee world and, like, the sports world if you're looking for that. I just lean into kind of like who I am now, yo, which is I'm an optimistic fan and I enjoy this. I am in a really, really good spot with this team. And for those that often will call me a shill, not that there's the whole thing. I know we're all chilling here, but like, I enjoy talking about this. I get it if it's a thing where Dan says this every year, this is the team, this is the year. Yeah, I do. I get excited. But more than ever, and this kind of goes past just the Ben Rice conversation, this team feels kind of like foolproof in a way. Now, there is a legitimate weakness. We will not be able to win a World Series if the Yankees don't upgrade their bullpen. But I don't stress about that too much because in the meantime, all right, they're just going to make things interesting. But come the deadline, the Yankees will, based off desire, based off need, based off urgency, go out and improve this bullpen. Plus, not to mention the assets that we have with the starting rotation that we've talked about at great length. We'll touch on Max Fried in just a moment, who was great last night. The prospects that we have, the bench that we have, the depth that we have, which should only get even better. We know about Cole and Rodon coming back, all this and that. But sticking to the idea of long-term, foolproof, being able to upgrade our one and only true weakness, which is the bullpen, not the bottom third of the order, by the way. Truly, I don't believe it is. And I don't even say that because they're hitting lately. This team, not saying it's ideal, but even a couple weeks back when this bottom third or the bottom of the order in general was not hitting, I still was of the mindset of, we could win the World Series with this bottom of the order. We could. We can't win it with this bullpen. The bullpen will get upgraded, though. So, assuming that is taken care of, there's really no facet of this team where I'm going to be going into October thinking, like, yo, we might be screwed. Where in past years, whether it be the lineup or the defense, I mean, even take it back to, like, not that far from, like, 2024 to now. I guess this is the theme of the episode because we're going to be talking about some things in a moment. But, like, the defense from then to compared to now, I mean, it's night and day. Night and day. 2024, we had, no, Judge isn't a bad defender in center field, but he's better in right. Judge was playing center. Soto, the bat made up for the defense, but he wasn't a great defender in right field. Verdugo, credit where it's due, he was a pretty decent outfielder defensively in left field. But at third base, we had Jazz playing out of position. At second base, you had Gleyber Torres. I like Gleyber, but we all know the deal with him. He wasn't a great defender. At times, he was actually kind of similar to Jazz in a way, where it's like when it was just plays that only required talent and instincts, he was pretty good. But anytime Gleyber had a think or whatever, we know the deal with that. And then Anthony Rizzo, I mean, as the years went on, honestly, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but he was not a great defensive first baseman by 2024. And it really culminated to a head when he didn't cover first base. I had been tweaking on him for a couple years because he never would cover first base. Anyways, that's neither here nor there. What I'm getting at generally here is the defense, just comparing it, the World Series team compared to now, it's night and day. Let's go around the diamond really quick. Catcher Austin Wells, you can't say nothing about his defense. He's great. Third base, McMahon, can't say nothing about his defense. He's great. Second base, Jazz, well, as we were just mentioning with Gleyber, like, he can make some mental mistakes. And, like, last night was a weird game with Jazz, but ultimately he is a well above average defensive second baseman. He was 8 outs above average last year. I'd have to check the numbers this year, but Jazz, You could have way worse options defensively at second base than Jazz. And you guys know I have my problems with Jazz, and I'm pretty vocal about that. But Jazz is a good defensive second baseman. Left field, Cody Bellinger right now is the best defensive left fielder in baseball. Grisham looks like he's back to being an above league average center fielder. And Judge, we know what he is in right, and the arm is back. Only real question here, at least going into the year, there's two here. Only real question going into the year was Ben Rice's defense at first base. Shout out Mike Francesa, who finally was back last night. That was a breath of fresh air, and I'm glad he's all good. He just had gone like 10 days without doing a podcast. My one gripe with him, and I think this is even he, the Pope, the godfather of sports talk radio, this whole entire industry, he can fall victim of, you say things so often for many years to where it kind of just becomes autopilot. You keep like regurgitating that same information. He just like groups Ben Rice into the idea of, oh, the Yankees have a million DHs. Ben Rice, he said last night, he's like, Ben Rice doesn't have a position. That's not true. Ben Rice has looked like, in my opinion, really good at first base. The picks have been there. Is he at the level of Paul Goldschmidt? I mean, I guess to try to temper my thoughts here, I guess not. But from what I've seen so far, even last night he made some great plays in foul territory. I think Ben Rice is a fine first baseman. I'd have to see the metrics, but is anybody, and if you do, like, let me know. You know, your thoughts are as good as mine. But, like, I don't worry about a ground ball being hit to Rice. I don't worry about a ball in the dirt. I don't worry about first base. The only real question is shortstop. And I'll tell you, man, like, even last night, it gets me worried about Volpe's return. And for those who don't know, I'm not, like, a Volpe hater. Like, I have my criticisms, but, like, I'm rooting for the guy. And we all should. If you're a Yankee fan, you should root for him to do well. Because guess what? Come Friday or whenever he comes back, he'll be taking over at shortstop. I do worry about his defense because we need him to be, as I was, like, when the ball is at your shortstop, you should be able to close your eyes. You should be a rock. And Volpe at times has been that. 2024, I always preach he truly was elite. Last year, obviously, he wasn't. That's really what I'm worried about more than like the offense. Because Copier is going to get his at-bats, honestly. Like, he just will, especially even with Stanton going out. We might see Copier get a start in right field while Judge gets a day at DH. Like, I think Copier will get his at-bats. And ultimately, I'm sure Volpe can find his way towards maybe like a 700 OPS, or at least to start the season, we know he can hit the ball well out of the gate. His defense needs to be good. That's the one issue defensively that I do worry about a little bit. But with this team, you know, I've been through many years of getting caught up in highs, which I don't avoid. Like, if I'm feeling good at a certain moment, I'm not going to, like, try to lower my expectations so I don't get hurt. I'll just deal with it then. Like, to me, like, pretty simple. Like, I've endured enough by now. Not to act like a Mets fan, like, you know, I've been tortured. But ultimately, I don't shy away from that. We have been. Like, the expectations get raised, and every year going into October, whether you were giving up during the season or not, come October, we're all there, and we're ready to go. And then we end in heartbreak, whether it's 2023, not even getting to October, the rare case where that happens, getting bounced in the first round last year, or losing the World Series, it's all the same. Come year's end, it feels like a failure of a season. Because it is. That's what we were raised on. At least I was. And I got the short end of the stick, by the way. Yeah, like, I got everything in terms of the attitude, the mindset, the expectations, but I didn't even get 09. I can't count 09. It was on the TV, like, we watched. I always use it like the example. It was kind of like how the 08 Olympics were put on in my house. Like, it was an event. We watched. I knew of its existence. But, like, my first year, for those who don't know, was 2011. So, like, I got all, like, in terms of, like, I don't know, like, the moral pedigree. Not moral pedigree. But, like, the attitude of a Yankee fan that lived through the 90s dynasty was, like, raised on the idea of the 90s dynasty winning all this and that. But I haven't seen it. I'm a zero-time World Series champion, okay? So, with that all in mind, I know that I felt, in terms of feeling good, excited, I felt this way before. But logistically speaking, my argument, in a way, as I was saying about the team, but for my argument, like, it feels pretty foolproof to me. Because what I realize is, especially with this team, they make it so easy to, whether it be defend the long-term outlook or just defend my excitement over them. Ultimately, all I got to do is talk ball and go through every single facet of this team. And only thing we'll disagree on, if you're applying logic and listen to me talk, like, I don't know, now I'm kind of sounding like a punk, but unless you think the bullpen is good, that's the only area we're really going to disagree, because that's where I acknowledge is our one and true weakness is the bullpen. Otherwise, if you want to talk about the defense, I think we'll come out on top with you on the mindset of this is our best defensive unit in years. I think I would convince you that this is the most speed we've ever had. I mean, we're up in the top, I think we're still top three or top five in all baseball in teams, among teams in stolen bases. The versatility, the depth that we have. I mean, there's one area I feel like where you can truly be like, yo, this is a problem. And it's obvious, and it's the bullpen. Which I'll tell you, it's April 28th right now. If it gets to, what is the trade deadline this year? Is it they switch it around sometimes. But let's just say it's July 31st, like it normally is. When it gets to August 1st, if we didn't make a trade deadline that is one that calms my nerves with the bullpen, and I don't want my nerves to just be calm with this bullpen. I don't want it to be a thing where it's just shored up. Like, I think we all can assume the Yankees will take care of the bullpen in some regard. I want to take it above and beyond that. Like, I want to go all in because of everything we just talked about. This is your chance, is this year. And no, are we better than the Dodgers? No. Were the Blue Jays better than the Dodgers last year? No. They could have beaten them, though. Come the World Series, we deal with it then. That's just, all right, we plan around a baseball series. Let's navigate this so we can win. But in the meantime, just like way back when, whether it be winning the American League, being the first on your side of things, best record in the AL, best record in the NL, or come divisional play, the postseason expanded, whatever it may be, ultimately, you want to get through your league. And with everything we just talked about, plus take a look at the American League, this is your chance. So you go all in on the trade deadline. I think the Yankees will, and they got to dip into like some of their... I mean, the prospects, the Yankees are really good at capitalizing on value for guys that are like not that high end. And they typically, in my opinion, have like too many untouchable prospects. Lombard's not going anywhere. He shouldn't. And by the way, I take back my offseason take. I had said after the Freddie Peralta trade, because I really wanted Freddie Peralta, you know, it would have taken Lombard to get that deal done. I'm very high on Dax Kilby. I still am. 2025 first round pick. He's probably a second baseman long term, honestly, because I've read that the arm isn't that great. Anyways, I was wrong. I was, I think, even myself, falling victim to emotion, which I guess we're all subject to that possibility. I was wrong. I'm glad the Yankees did not trade George Lombard Jr. for Freddie Peralta. Okay? I'm going to throw up. Yes, chat, I was wrong. Screen record it. Anyways, I would like to see the Yankees dip into like one of their untouchables. Not Lombard, not LeGrand. Hey, but the name I keep coming back to, and we might see this guy next week, because Rodon may not be ready by the time the Yankees need a fifth starter on the 5th of May. We might see Emmer Rodriguez. I'm not looking to trade anybody, but you got to be willing. You got to like take everybody and be like, all right, if there's a major deal on the table, who is somebody we can forgive the thought of trading? Lombard, no. LeGrand, hey, no. And obviously, you got to get some sort of value for Spencer Jones' this deadline, by the way, but whatever. Elmer Rodriguez, I think, could be the perfect one of, all right, you're loaded already in starting pitching prospects. You're already like in a great spot depth-wise. The rotation we have right now is going to be intact for next year as well. So everything we talk about with this rotation is going to be even furthered come next season, the depth of it, how much, you know, we have waiting in the bank or just MLB caliber starters, because what we have right now, plus the return of Clark Schmidt, which, real quick on Clark, he is coming back in the second half. Don't bank on anything from him really this year. Like, the Yankees won't need him as a starter. He's not going to be built up as a starter. And that's one of the situations where I could see in past years, and I guess you could see it this year too, but I want to make sure this doesn't happen, where the Yankees would be like, all right, they'll get a reliever here and there, but it's like, yo, we got Clark Schmidt back, and we don't need him in rotation, so he'll be a weapon of the bullpen. I'm good, bro. It's nothing against Clark, but I kind of look at it like, yo, I'll see you next year. Anyways, we'll have Clark next year. Like, the rotation, we're in a great spot for years to come. I mean, there's guys... Forget LeGrand here for a second. Like, forget all these other young guys that we know about. They're, like, go look up a Yankee pitcher in Double A that you never heard of before, and he's probably got a one dot. Like, it's pretty insane. We're loaded across the board. But if we were to go into, like, just dip into the idea of trading one of the blue chips, and Elmer should be considered one of those. He's a top 100 prospect. I think he's somebody that we should at least consider, because no matter what, you got to give up something to get something, as we know. I want to get something good, not just depth in the bullpen. I know the Padres are going to be in it. We're not going to be able to get, like, Mason Miller. But whoever the next best is, or, like, whatever the premier top reliever is, like, I'm talking when we sold off Miller at the deadline in 2016, like, something along those lines. Whatever reliever of that regard is available, if any at all, like, and if it takes a prospect, and I know the reliever market has changed for the most part. Miller was an exception. Like, Mason Miller was an exception last year. More often than not, for a big reliever these days, a blue-chip reliever, it doesn't cost what it did for, like, you know, with the Guardian Indians at the time, gave up for Miller, Andrew Miller in 16, Cubs with Chapman. Like, that was kind of a different time. But you still, if you want to get a legitimate reliever, you got to give up something to get something. Elmer Rodriguez, just going off the idea of we flipped him, we could flip him essentially from, you traded Carlos Narvaez, who you didn't need, you bring in Elmer Rodriguez, he was awesome. And if that turns into, I don't know every reliever in baseball off the top of my head, but what I'm saying is, you got to be willing to trade a blue chip prospect, and maybe Elmer would be one of those guys. Not looking to do it, but point is, overarching point here, The one issue with this team, as we know, is the bullpen. I anticipate that will be shored up and then some. Otherwise, defensively, best team of the Judge era. Lineup-wise, balance-wise, is it the best team of the Judge era? No, maybe not. But it's not that far off. And with the emergence of Ben Rice, we now have a true, finally, outside of the 1 year of Juan Soto, a 1A to Aaron Judge. And he truly is that. He truly, truly is that. So between that, between, again, the depth that we have, main point, though, being, along with, you know, the speed, the defense, fundamentals being a lot better this year than in prior years, the starting rotation. I mean, that's why I say the bottom third of the order we can get by with, although it's not ideal, you know, even when it was struggling. And another hit for McMahon last night. I think the old heads were right, Chad. Starting pitching wins ball games, and, like, it's such a, I don't know, a very confident feeling going into every single outing and going to the October this year, where it's like, not that you want to bank on only needing to score 3 runs to win a game, but I mean, this offense isn't too bad anyways. But again, the postseason rotation is going to be Freed, Culver, Don, Cam. And that's like my autopilot, what I've been saying for a few months now. You might want to have Cam start in game one, but I think we've been harping on this long enough. I'm really, really excited about this team, and I think we're in a great spot, Chad. I think we're in a great spot. We're at a 106 win pace, which who gives a crap about that to a degree? Because, like, ultimately, you got to get it done in the end, and if they don't, who cares how many games we win in the regular season? But for now, the hope is we can get to the World Series. We can win the World Series, but we'll deal with that then. In the meantime, what is the Yankees' responsibility right now? It's to win the American League East and to win the American League as a whole. Get the number one seed going into October. Win your series. Get the bye. Whatever it may be, you got to get to the World Series, and we'll deal with that then. And I think we're just as set up, if not more set up, than in years past. And the only reason I would say just as and not more is in 2024, the American League was also very weak. And the teams we had to get through, I always say, like, the 2023 Yankees could have gotten through that American League. By the way, you can't just compare how good a team is to another team based off of where they got into in the postseason. Like, just because the 2024 Yankees made it to the World Series doesn't mean that's automatically a better team than they were better than 2023, but for that reason, that's not why they were better than 2023. They were just better. But in the case of this team, or even last year's team, I think the 2025 team that got beat by Toronto was even a team that rivaled 2024. But the competition was much stronger last year. Anyways, the AL is weak this year. We'll see what it is come season's end. But as long as the Yankees, so long as they shore up the bullpen, which they better, and I think they will. I really, really think they will. And again, you're going to have only the 4-man staff in October, so you'll have Warren and Weathers go to the bullpen by that point, and their stuff is really going to play. Really going to play. And then we'll see about if LeGrand could come up. And then you got to make an addition, the deadline, for a couple relievers, one of them hopefully being a blue chip. Let's leave it there, though, and move on really quick. We won't spend too long on this. I want to get to the next headline here. But, Max Fried, he just continues to be fantastic. Last night, he throws a very casual 6 scoreless innings against the Rangers for his 4th win. He now has a 2.09 ERA in 7 starts this season, 0.80 whip. He has been utterly fantastic. And last night, didn't have his best stuff, I guess. But in the end, yeah, like I've been saying, a casual 6 scoreless innings against the Rangers. He just, it's nuts because he's not, you know, an overpowering, you know, flame-throwing type ace. And he doesn't exactly have the look with the way he pitches of, like, a bulldog with, like, you know, Crochet when he's going, Scooble when he's going, or even, like, Cam or Cole at his best. Like, it's a very different style of ace-caliber pitcher, but he is an ace, like, more so than ever. And when the Yankees first acquired him, you know, like, these days I'll wonder, like, is Max Fried underrated? Like, we've talked about that before. And I don't know if that's a baseball perception, although I do think he is, probably for that reason we just gave, which is he's not, like, overpowering. He's not, you know, a flamethrower, whatever it may be. Although he does get it up to, like, 97, 90. Like, he can throw the ball pretty hard. But he's a pitcher. Like, there's so much more art to the way he throws. Anyways, I don't even know if I at the time when the Yankees had signed him, considered, like, Max Fried to be a true ace. And maybe he's at a different spot now with New York than he was with the Braves, which was a very good pitcher. People would call him injury-prone, which I thought that was a little bit overblown, like, I don't know. And, like, the postseason success, granted, we saw it last year, and that's one thing I criticized Fried on a lot. Not even criticized, but I just mentioned it when people bring up the offense and how, oh, same old Yankees, blah, blah, blah. It's like running it back. Well, I'm sorry. Like, if Max Fried or whoever's pitching game 1 of the ALDS against whoever this year or whatever postseason series gives up seven runs or whatever it was in that clunker that he had against Toronto, which I forgive him for. It's all good. Things happen. If that were to happen again from whoever our starter is, and I use the same example with Luke Weaver, like if our setup man is tipping pitches and crapping the bed, like we're probably screwed no matter what offense we ran back or didn't run back. Wasn't good against Toronto last year. Was really good against Boston in the wild card. And, you know, one of the things I always would mention to push back on that narrative when people would tell me that, oh, he's a postseason choker, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, all right, I understand he's had some bad postseason outings, but you can't tell me he's a postseason choker when the dude pitched the World Series clinching game six against the Astros in 2021. He got the win that game. So to me, it's like, all right, has Max Fried or generally any player, if they have postseason struggles, is it, okay, they just haven't performed as, you know, good as they can, as good as they have in the regular season? Or is it a thing where, like, they get the yips? Is it, like, a too much pressure and they can't handle it? Kind of like pre-09 A-Rod type vibes where it feels like the moment was getting to him. Like, from everything I've seen and knowing that Fried pitched that World Series clinching game six, it's not a nerves thing. So ultimately, it's do you trust Max Fried's stuff or not? I do. And he was apparently tipping pitches against Toronto last year too. But, like, same logic with the Boston star. Like, he was great against Boston. Now, their offense, granted it was last year, they did have Bregman. But shout out Max Fried. He's been utterly terrific. And last year, a 19-game winner, sub-3 ERA. And so far this year, 4-1, 2.09 ERA. He has been absolutely fantastic. And with that, we get to the question that I have here as the title of today's video. You know, first things first, I want to shout out my boy Earl on Twitter, which I feel like I'm always shouting out Earl. But Earl knows ball, man. He really does. He always put out good tweets. Well, there's a couple tweets I want to shout out here because an old tweet from Frank the Tank, is resurfacing on Twitter. We'll discuss this one in just a moment. But I want to mention my boy Earl's tweet really quick. You know what? I retweeted, so I ain't got to look him up. So last night, this is right after the game, my boy Earl, at Yankee Fan Earl. Earl, I don't know if you're watching. I actually think we're quite similar where it's like, Earl, I bet you're kind of an obnoxious dude. But like, you bring it home and you know ball. And Earl often, like once a week, will have a banger of a tweet. I think this was one of them. He goes, obviously, I loved having Juan Soto, but Max Fried and Cody Bellinger have really been good Yankees that probably aren't here if Soto stays. And then he goes, Cash God deserves credit for the pivot. That's kind of like his little shtick, is calling Cashman Cash God, which, hey, we've all been there at some point in our lives. But the point remains. Again, he goes, obviously, I love having Juan Soto, but Max Fried and Cody Bellinger have been really good Yankees that probably aren't here if Soto stays. And that is absolutely the case. Had the Yankees signed Soto, had Soto signed with us, which would have been for $760 million over 16 years. We know he ended up signing with the Mets for $765 over 15 with the possibility of it going up to $805. He has the opt-out after 5 years that the Mets can void by upping his AAV to 50 over whatever. So we know he took the deal with the Mets, if you hadn't heard. If he had signed with the Yankees, we don't get Max Fried. We almost certainly don't get Cody Bellinger. And I want to talk about the pivot, but just to lay it, the groundwork of the conversation, I guess, like, what would the offseason have looked like had they signed Soto? I mean, maybe they still signed Paul Goldschmidt to play first base. They probably still acquire Devin Williams. But no Max Fried. Like, what's our rotation then? What would our rotation have been last year, or right now for that matter? I mean, I guess it would be the same, just no Fried. But like, okay, last year, so what? Is Luis Gil starting game one? And then, of course, at the time, you know, we didn't know locked in that Cole was going to get TJ, but he was coming off, and I'm sure the Yankees had their concerns. But our postseason rotation last year would have been, dear God, I mean, Clark ended up getting hurt too. Who pitched games? So it would have been like Rodon, Heel. Jesus Christ. Who would have? Rodon, Heel, Camp. So Camp still would have been around. And we would not have had Bellinger. Would Jason have been playing? What would our, so Judge would have remained in center, Soto would be in right. Would have had Jason and left. I'm not even going to try to be nice about this. Or I'm not even going to try to like be... Well, I am being fair in my opinion. But like, it's obvious that we would be a worse team. We would be a worse team without having lost out on Soto. And in regards to the pivot that Earl mentions, all that matters is that we win the World Series. And if we don't win the World Series, nobody gives a damn and it won't be celebrated. But in the meantime, right now, while we sit here on April 28th, you know, over a year later... on year two, and forget what the Mets are doing. That's one thing. And yes, I do take some enjoyment in that because I find Mets fans kind of insufferable. And speaking of, and my best friend's a Mets fan, but like, you know, you guys know how they get. Like, I've always said this. I don't hate the Mets. I do hate Mets fans. I just do. Frank the Tank, who I love. I love watching Frank. I think he's a good dude. But after the Mets signed Soto, and a lot of Mets fans acted this way. Like, I got texts from Jolly Olive that, like, I would never bring up to him right now because I really feel bad for Jolly. It sucks to, like, have your season be over in April. Like, truly, I do feel bad for, like, my boy Sloke, people that actually like that are Mets fans. Like, that does suck. I feel bad for him. But hella people were going crazy after the Mets signed Soto. And one of the tweets that was popping at the time was Frank the Tank. Frank Fleming on Twitter goes, "No more little brother. No more in the shadow of the Bronx. This is the biggest FU the Mets have ever dropped in the Yankees, and it's great." We're not here to get into the Mets side of things, but, you know, obviously, you know where that's, how that's ended up for them. And if anything, I do take pride in, real quick side note, separate conversation. This is not what I want to even talk about, but I am very pleased with how disastrous it has gone for the Mets since signing Soto, just for the case of Soto not being pleased with his decision. And there were a lot of things last year where, you know, articles that would come out, which, whether you want to believe it or not, but let's just use logic for a second. And let's use logic as well with this. It is not a thing where, oh, who cares? He's rich. Rose will always say that. Chris Rose will always say that. They're like, oh, you think he's miserable? He has $800 million in the bank. That means nothing, bro. That means nothing. Because he could have gotten $760 from the Yankees. And if you think he hasn't at least at one point considered, the grass may have been greener if I stay with the Yankees. Or forget the Yankees. The grass may have been greener if I sign with the Dodgers or somewhere else. All I'm saying is, in regards to this part, and then we'll go back to what we're talking about, is I'm a human being. I've matured a little bit, but I very much enjoy what has happened. And, like, it's gotten to the point, I was saying this yesterday, where it's like, you know when you have, like, an ex-girlfriend that at one point, like, you were crying over? And I was sobbing over one. Not actually sobbing. Oh, you know what? That's a lie. I'll be honest with you guys. There were a couple of TikToks that those fucking little 16-year-olds make that are bangers. Some little, forgot, I don't know, probably freshman in high school put together a banger at the time. It was like right after Soto signed, and it was like a compilation of the 2024 Yankees, and they put Time of Your Life, or what's the actual name of the song? The Green Day song. And it was late at night, and I'm not going to lie to you, like, I had some tears flowing from my eyes. I was very, very upset about Juan Soto leaving. Like, it was devastating at the time, for whether it be just losing him, you know, right after losing the World Series too, and it was just like the principle of what it meant. And in fairness to Frank in that tweet, like, that was significant at the time. But as it's gone on, you know, this wasn't the case end of last year. This wasn't the case maybe in the beginning this year, but maybe it's with the Mets slump and just how great I feel with this Yankees team right now. It's very much where, like, I don't know if you guys, after, like, I've only had one ex-girlfriend in my life, and shout out my current girlfriend, Chloe, who just cleaned out the entire kitchen. Oh, my God. I'll tell you guys more about this in the watch party when we're just chilling, but live tonight at 8 o'clock, by the way. You know, like, I don't know if you guys ever done this, but you have an ex-girlfriend, and it's like, they break up with you, like, you're heartbroken, so, like, you got to be out of sight, out of mind, which is some advice for, like, some younger kids. If you're going through your first breakup, really anybody, I'm an Instagram story muter. Like, if me and a girl are done, yo, like, I can't think about you. So I just, like, I mute you. Like, that's kind of how it was with Soto. Like, I was legitimately heartbroken over it, and it bothered me. Like, it crushed me. And, like, all the time I would think about it from, like, you know, a place of anger, not trying to talk like Yoda here or nothing, but, like, I was giving into the dark side. And I'm sure I would do it again if I felt the emotions that strong. But what I'm getting at here is, I kind of realized, like, yesterday I was talking to Biebs, BBD, and Max about this. It's like, I kind of, like, don't care now, yo. And it feels like the stages of a breakup in a way, where you get to the point so far removed from it. And often it comes when, you know, you're doing well in life. And in this case, the Yankees are playing well. I love this team, the homegrown, everything to do with what we got right here. And they're just, like, a really good unit. And by the way, Bellinger's struggling lately, but I don't want to gloss over the fact of how awesome he is, too. Like, he feels like such a Yankee, as does Max Fried. Like, I love this team, chat. I love this team. So between that, between the time removed, and, yeah, a little sprinkle of the Mets struggles, and I'm sure, you know, in fact, like, I guess I can't say I know, although reports have been out there. Like, is it me being biased to say, like, Soto's probably not enjoying his time, and he regrets leaving to go to the Mets? Or forget the Yankees, just regrets signing with the Mets in general. So I'm sure it's a little bit of that, too. But I find myself, finally, it's like, I'm over it, Chad. Like, I'm glad how it all worked out. And that's kind of what this is getting to. We would have been a worse team right now. Would have been a worse team last year had we signed Soto. Long term, forget about it. And Soto's a great player, by the way. But I'm over it, yo. And it's a great, great feeling, because it drove me insane for a while, and it felt like kind of like a stain in the Yankees' legacy, which it was and still remains. And there, like, that part of the conversation is very much still in play with, I know you guys like the alternate uniforms. I don't mind the idea of an alternate uniform, but we got to win something first. I'm tired of all this change. The Yankees are still doing a lot of BS that is frustrating. But ultimately, what matters is, like, win the World Series, which I keep saying, yo, you can have your alternate uniform. I'm sure it looks sick. I'd buy one, win a World Series first, and then you can do whatever you want. You can wear polka dot pinstripes for all I care. You got to win a World Series first. That's ultimately what the brand is. The pinstripes are nothing without winning. The whatever cliche, like, the facial hair policy is nothing like without winning. You know what I'm saying? Like, ultimately, we're the Yankees if we win. And we haven't been winning, so that's what it comes down to. But our chances, our aspirations of a World Series this year, next year, we would be have a, I would be less optimistic with what I envision the team to be had the Yankees re-signed Soto and not had gotten Max Fried, not gotten Cody Bellinger. And I don't want to say the vibes would be different because, yo, I really do think, this is an unbiased opinion, Soto was better off with a team like the Yankees where he doesn't per se have to be the guy, although he certainly was like the guy with Judge. But with the way Soto operates, you know, it gets a lot of traction with the Mets thing, how like he just does his thing, doesn't talk to teammates when, you know, they're on the road, whatever it was. Like, that was a whole thing. And Soto's not handling the PR stuff great with the Mets, but like, that is who he is. Like, he likes to show up, he works his ass off, plays baseball, and then he goes home. Like, that worked the Yankees. Like, the Yankees very much just like let him do that. They were a tight-knit group, and you could see it, man. I mean, like, this is when I was like really hating on Soto. And we got to wrap this up soon. I have another point to make about Ben Rice, but just allow me to indulge here. Like, I go back and watch clips, especially last year. I'd be like watching World Series clips with Soto when he was with the Yankees, just any point throughout the Yankees. Then you look at him, how he looks at with the Mets now. Like, not to sound like weird here, but you may know what I'm saying. I don't know if it's like a cortisol increase. Soto was he was a better looking dude with the Yankees. Like, there was a glow to him, and that's often how life goes. When you're stressed, you look worse. When you're feeling good, you look better. There's a glow when people are doing well in life, and that is very much cortisol related. That's another podcast, maybe a different channel, but you can just see it. Like, I don't think Soto's enjoying his time with the Mets, and that's neither here nor there. That's really not what this conversation is about. Last thing to bring this all home is, because I made it quite clear, like, in my opinion, like, we are a better team off, better off right now having not re-signed Soto, and everything about this team I love. Like, I'm in a really good spot with this team right now, Chad, as we currently stand. It doesn't mean the World Series is going to be won, and if it isn't, then I'll be in a bad spot, and we'll do it all again. But for right now, in this very moment, and this can change with, you know, God forbid we get swept by the Orioles this coming weekend. I don't think that'll happen, but, like, I understand how baseball works. For right now, which is all we have, is this moment right now. The Power of Now. Great book. I highly recommend you read this. I've read this a couple of times, most recently in 2024. After that piece of shit left us. No, I'm just kidding. Right now I'm in a really good spot with this team. And that's why I was excited to talk about this today. I want to mention one last thing about Ben Rice, because to put a bow on the whole Soto thing, him as a player, he's great. So let's forget everything else, put that all to the side right now. But him as a player, he was terrific with us. Had, how many homers did he have? Did he have 40 homers with us? I think, 41. He was great. And he was more than ever, like, especially coming off, you know, Anthony Rizzo, and especially post-concussion Anthony Rizzo. Like, at the time, he was great. By the way, how was that DJ post yesterday? That was my favorite Instagram post of the year. That was random. For those who didn't see, DJ had like a random, and he never posts on Instagram. Last time he did, I think Chloe told me it was 2021 or 2020. DJ randomly posted a thank you thing to the Yankees yesterday. It was awesome. I highly encourage you to check it out. Like, and he was getting so much love. I love you, DJ. You're awesome. We'll love you forever. You're the freaking GOAT. Anyways, you had Anthony Rizzo as like the lefty, the 1A, like the second hitter behind Judge. Like, he was Judge's protection, or he was, yeah, like that 1A bat. In previous years, it was supposed to be Stanton. And like, there were times, and still are times, where like Judge and Stanton will win you ball games, and very much so. So I don't even want to pretend like that's not ever the case. Like, that is the case. But when we're talking the Yankees, we're talking Yankee Stadium, like, you do need that true lefty hitting power bat. And that's, you know, speaking of me getting the short end of the stick, in terms of the 1-9 of a lineup, well, yeah, I missed the World Series in 2009, and I wish I saw that lineup on a day in and day out basis. Like, 2011, I had Robbie Cano and I had Mark Teixeira. Like, I grew up on Jeter, Granderson, Cano, A-Rod, Teixeira, Swisher, Ibanez, Martin, Gardner, some variation of that 1-9. Like, I had my Cano, I had my Teixeira. Like, the lefty power bats is a thing that you need, and the Yankees' best option they had was Anthony Rizzo. So here's what I'm going to get to. The biggest thing with all this, and this is not necessarily the plan per se, the Yankees believed in Ben Rice, but if we want to compare what the team would be with or without Soto, put it like this. What team is better? A team that has a left-handed hitter wearing number 22 that's putting up a 1.0 OPS, and he's one of the best hitters in baseball, paired with Aaron Judge. That player with Max Fried and Cody Bellinger, or that player without Max Fried and Cody Bellinger? I think you see what I'm getting at here. Got to let the year play out, but I believe in Rice. I think if you're watching this, you believe in Rice. The advanced metrics back up the numbers that he's putting up. And you got to let it go through the whole time. But just we're a month in now. Allow me here. We know what Ben Rice is doing so far this year. See him on the right there, hitting 322. Let's just keep it OPS to be simple. 1.191 OPS in 29 games so far this year. Juan Soto, his first 29 games of 2024, 998 OPS. Juan Soto in 29 games to begin his tenure with the Yankees, which was great. He was awesome. Juan Soto hit 318 with a 434 on base, 564 slugging. All Rice's numbers are better so far this year in the first 29 games. He hit 7 home runs. Rice has 10. 24 RBIs. All right, one more than Ben Rice, who has 23. That's top 5 in the AL, but Soto's great. We know that. 998 OPS for Soto in the first 29 games of 2024. Ben Rice, 1.191. Will Ben Rice finish the year with a 1.191? I'll say probably not. But I'll leave it here. If you believe, like I do, that Ben Rice is, what do you want to say, a 1.OPS hitter, or one of the best hitters in baseball, whichever way you want to phrase it, I think you know what I'm getting at, or a true lethal second part of a duo that Judge needs, and that's a lefty bat. If you believe in all that, which you should, you should believe in Ben Rice. And I think we all do, so I don't got to harp on that. We're already, in my opinion, with everything we listed, given just Max Fried and Cody Bellinger and like the overall core unit of this team compared to what it would be had Soto re-signed with us, I think we're already better off. But then it also happened to work out where, take like a blind man a couple years ago, and like he can just see like mirages of what the Yankees are. It's like, I can see 99, a man wearing 99 still. Oh, that must be Judge. He has a 1.OPS. Oh, we signed Max Fried. Word, let's go. We signed Max Fried. We got Cody Bellinger too? Awesome. Oh, no way. Is that number 22 I see? Left-handed hitter with the 1.1 OPS. Where we re-signed Soto. We got Fried in here. That's going to do it for our show chat. But it's worked out. It has worked out. And that's where we sit right now on April 28th. We got to win the World Series. If you can't tell, I'm feeling pretty freaking good about this team. I look forward to watching this team every single day. And I love the New York Yankees chat. I love Ben Rice. I love Aaron Judge. I hate alternate uniforms. I hate hoods under jerseys. No more of that. Jazz, you're playing well lately. No more lollipops in the box. I hate that shit when he's in the batter's box and you have a lollipop in your mouth. With all that said, like, I have my complaints. Nothing is perfect per se. Like, the idea of an alternate uniform where we haven't won, along with the beard policy all going away, like, I have my gripes. Trust me, I do. Those are the little things that bother me. Not to end on a sour note here, but, like, yesterday, like, what I forget the most from yesterday's game is, like, Austin Wells not hustling out of the box for whatever reason. Stuff like that. Like, because I can't compare the talent for myself to the players. Like, I'm not more talented than Jazz Chisholm Jr., but I would know how to properly wear a Yankee uniform. I would know how to hustle out of the box. I would know how to handle myself in post-game interviews. Things along those lines is where I'll start tweaking. And I know I would veto an alternate uniform right now, as would George Steinbrenner. So I have my issues. But ultimately what I care about is a team on the field. And this team on the field is one that I am more excited about than, at least in season. Because before the season, I always get hyped up and there's stretches where I'll get excited. But it's backed up. Like, again, like the word I keep going back to, or phrase I keep going back to, is like foolproof. It's like, unless we're disagreeing on the bullpen, which I don't think anybody that would disagree about my optimism with this team would all of a sudden be like, no, the bullpen's actually really good. No, we're all in agreement of that. Like, if Dan Rourke agrees with you about a certain area of a team being a weakness, chances are it's a weakness. With that said, you guys know I think that'll be upgraded. We'll be all right long term. This is the best spot I think I've ever been in as a Yankee fan is right now. I love this team. And we'll watch this team again tonight. 8 o'clock, watch party will start. Of course, we're now here on the main channel with the Morning Yankee Show. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll be live, tonight for the watch party, game 2 against the Rangers, which is going to be an awesome pitching matchup. Cam versus Jacob DeGrom. Fire me up. And, series finale will be tomorrow. We'll be live for that as well. We'll be live little programming schedule update live tonight, 8 o'clock first pitch. 8:05 first pitch. We'll be live at around 8-ish. Tomorrow afternoon game, we'll be live for that as well. It's a 2:30 first pitch, I believe, or somewhere around 2. I'll have to double check. Reminder, tonight's game is on Prime. And then, two more games against the Rangers. Off day Thursday, then back home for the Orioles on Friday. We'll be live for that game as well. That's all I got. Good show today. Appreciate you guys so much for being in here. The sun is shining. And, hope everybody has a fantastic rest of your day. And hopefully it gets even better tonight when I see you for the watch party. Sun is shining. Have a great Tuesday, everybody. Love you so much. Let's go, Yanks. And I'll see you later tonight for game 2 against the Rangers. Till then, let's go, Yanks.